lot of plans by previous administrations, like early return enterprises or supporting domestic production and similar projects, have never achieved their intended goals.
According to ISIPO, Iran's Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization, we have planned to revive 1,600 idle units in the present year, which is predicted to create jobs for 28,800 persons.
The government is seriously pursuing its programs to resolve production units' problems in collaboration with the private sector. And very good planning has been done in this regard, according to ISIPO. In this section, what we mean by production is basically non-oil produce to sell domestically and or export.
Now, in talking foreign trade while looking east and to the U.S. sanctioned West, not so much like Rouhani, Raisi's term has seen a boost in non-oil exports. That has been a long dream to Iran. Poura Brahimi, head of the Economic Commission of Parliament, says in early July of this year, the head of Iran's Trade Development Organization announced the 40% increase in non-oil exports this spring compared to the same period last year. He added the 40% increase in non-oil exports has led to a positive $600 million trade balance in the country. In August, IRCA, the Customs Administration, was noted as saying that non-oil trade since Raisi's government took office reached $84 billion.
I think positive developments have taken place in the domestic economic front, especially when it comes to the monetary base. In 2020, we enjoyed a growth of more than 42% in a monetary base, which was around 26% in 2021. One of the most important prerequisites for controlling the monetary base is amending banking financial statements. In the latest financial statement released by Bank Milli as the largest bank in Iran, which is state-owned, the deficit decreased by 60%, which showcases the performance of the 13th administration.
Non-oil goods exported to Turkey were valued at under $1.750 billion in the first 3 months of the current year. 11-12% of the country's total weight and value of trade done with the world is related to Turkey. Turkey, to which Iran exports from livestock products to plants and flowers to fresh fruits and vegetables, cigarettes, construction materials and petro-refinery products. To Turkmenistan, on the other hand, the export share of Iranian goods from non-oil trade hit a value of over $276.5 million. That's an 89% growth. As for Oman, products exported to the Sultanate were valued at $716 million. That means a 63% hike in value. The same growing trend in Iranian exports applies to Poland, Tajikistan and West Africa, among others.
That'll be it for today. Do look out for more, as more measures taken can reveal more unexpected results. Right here at the same times. From the whole team, thanks for staying with us on this episode. Until next time, bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Physicians for Human Rights have recently announced that, according to its calculations, the number of children denied treatment outside Gaza had nearly doubled. This number includes children younger than one. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Feda Al-Ghidra journalist. This article is published under the heading, Spike in Children Denied Medical Treatment by Zionist Regime's Military. Here's more. His health is deteriorating daily. Now, Saeed Jargoun, 14, can't walk. Saeed from the city of Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip has a cancerous tumor in his right leg. His condition is worsening because the Zionist regime occupation authorities are preventing him from traveling to the occupied territories for treatment. He is not the only one. Physicians for Human Rights has recently announced that, according to its calculations, the number of children denied treatment outside Gaza had nearly doubled. This number includes children younger than one. In September last year, Saeed underwent tests and PET and CT scans in an Egyptian hospital, after which doctors decided to transfer him to the occupied territories. The tumor in his right leg, which was first diagnosed in 2016, requires advanced medical treatment that is not available in Palestinian hospitals. Nahla, 28, Saeed's sister, told the Electronic Intifada that while Saeed was granted an all-hospitals appointment issued by both Zionist regime hospitals and those in the occupied West Bank, the delay in getting a travel permit to leave Gaza means that has now expired. We live in fear of his health. It's hard to see someone suffer all the time and you can't help him, Nahla said, adding, we just want to know the reason for rejection. As for Saeed, he's getting bored. I just hope to get treatment quickly so that I can walk and play with my friends, the teenager said, adding, I get bored sitting at home all the time, especially since there is no electricity or any means of entertainment in Gaza. Due to the Zionist regime restrictions on the import of fuel, Gaza suffers frequent electricity cuts. Saeed is not the only child who is awaiting the Zionist regime's approval to travel for treatment, whether to the occupied territories or to the West Bank. Physicians for Human Rights recently found that the number of children denied treatment had nearly doubled. According to the organization, in 2020, 17% of children's requests to leave the Gaza Strip for the purpose of receiving medical care not available in the Gaza Strip were delayed or refused. In the first 6 months of 2021, this rate had nearly doubled to 32%, according to calculations made by Physicians for Human Rights. According to the World Health Organization, more than 155 out of a total of 481 Palestinians under the age of 18 seeking to cross the Erez checkpoint for treatment in July this year were either refused or delayed. Among 0 to 3-year-olds, 30 children of 136 were rejected or delayed in seeking treatment. Such obstructions can prove fatal. Three children have died so far this year after permits to leave Gaza for medical treatment were denied or delayed, the human rights group Al-Mizan has reported. And Sharah Madani, 16, who has a malignant brain tumor, is also waiting for the Zionist regime permission to travel for treatment. And Sharah's mother told the Electronic Intifada that the delay in her daughter's treatment caused her to lose one eye as a result of the growth of the tumor. For years, the Zionist regime has been delaying, the mother said. I'm in so much pain while my daughter is slowly dying, and I can do nothing for her, she said. Abdurrahman Abu Mustafa is less than a year old. He has lived with heart disease since he was born but needs open heart surgery, not available in the Gaza Strip. Gaza's health sector is in serious disarray as a direct result of the Zionist regime's 15-year blockade and its tight restrictions on people and goods entering and leaving the coastal strip of land. There is a chronic shortage of essential medicines and import bans block vital equipment. Gaza's health ministry, for example, has been unable to import medical devices and parts for radiology and imaging services such as CT, PET and X-ray scanning machines. In 2021, the West Bank Palestinian Authority submitted 120 requests for the entry of such equipment, of which only 30 or 25% were approved by February 2022. Receiving exit permits for medical treatment is therefore critical in Gaza, and time is out of the essence. Ahmad Abu Mustafa, Abdurrahman's father, said that his son needs urgent attention. Among the problems that Abdurrahman faces are a severe lack of oxygen. Ahmad said, I submitted many requests for the permit but to no avail. I don't know the reason for the delay. I just received a mobile message that the request is under consideration. The Zionist regime often also refuses to allow a minor's parents to accompany them. According to Physicians for Human Rights, in 2021, those rejections reached 35% in 2021. Abdurrahman's parents did not even try to get permits for themselves, and should Abdurrahman be granted an exit permit, he will be accompanied by his grandmother. The head of the International Commission to Support the Rights of the Palestinian People, Salah Abdul Atti, told the Electronic Intifada that the Zionist regime rejects most requests to obtain permits for treatment outside Gaza. The permit regime amounts to torture for Gaza patients. Atti told the Electronic Intifada, especially children for whom anguish about whether they can get treatment is simply added to the physical pain itself. It is also a grave violation of international humanitarian law, specifically the Geneva Conventions, which stipulate a right to medical care, Atti said. He called for serious and effective international intervention to end the siege and put real pressure on the fabricated regime of Israel to ease the suffering of 2 million Palestinians in Gaza.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches.
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
U.S. President Joe Biden's approval rating has fallen to historic lows as his administration is struggling to tackle unprecedented challenges both at home and abroad. And when it comes to the sixth quarter of the presidential tenure, only former presidents Donald Trump and Jimmy Carter come even close to Biden, but they still manage to garner more support, which puts Biden in an awkward position. The Democratic leader rose to power to, quote-unquote, save the country from the eccentric presidential manners of Donald Trump, but now the U.S. population is more unhappy with the president than ever. Indeed, former President George W. Bush, who waged two wars in the Middle East, is the one standing on top of the crowd for the sixth quarter with 75% in the Gallup polls.
Bad news for the U.S. president.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And in today's episode, we'll try to get to the bottom of how President Joe Biden got here, what it means for the administration, the U.S. government as a whole, and, of course, the American people. The Democrat from Delaware is facing new lows in U.S. citizens' expression of dissatisfaction with his work. Now, today, I'll be accompanied by Lauren Witzke, co-host of Crosstalk News. And later in the show, we'll be joined by Tony Ndege, co-chair of the North Carolina Green Party. Please stay tuned.
The low approval ratings for the president are not very surprising when other polls are taken into account. Take the sour U.S. economy, which more than two-thirds of Americans think is getting increasingly worse, according to an ABC News Washington Post poll. With the Democratic leader in office, the nation could be facing yet another economic recession, which plays a key role in how people view a president.
Now, the public dissatisfaction with Joe Biden's handling of his job has been attributed to a combination of the pandemic's continued effects on supply chains, the war in Ukraine driving up energy and fuel costs, and skyrocketing inflation. So what does the fall of President Joe Biden's job approval below 40% in a recent Gallup poll for a first time mean for the Democratic administration and the U.S. government in general?
Well, it means a red wave is coming. It means that people are frustrated with not only the prices of inflation. We can't even afford to buy groceries. There are ordinary working class families who are struggling, and we're feeling the impact of the poor decisions that our president has made. A lot of people could have dealt with President Biden for a couple of years, for 4 years, had things not gone this bad, where he's provoking war overseas. Every chance he gets, he's sending our money overseas, $60 billion to Ukraine, while the Democrats denied business owners here in the United States of America a $48 billion aid package. You know, and it just goes to show that he's putting Americans last. People are noticing, and people are paying the consequence, are suffering from the consequences of this.
The Democratic Party is already facing myriad challenges to stick to power, whether in chambers of the Congress or the White House. Trump is most probably aiming to return to power in 2024, and a preamble to that will be the fall of the House and the Senate to Republicans in the upcoming midterm elections in 2022.
Biden's an opportunist, too, to a degree. I see that his low polling numbers are a reflection of how everybody's feeling, not only in our wallets, at the gas tank and at the grocery store. I mean, the first 52 executive orders, he came in, you know, his first week in office and reversed a bunch of good policies that were specifically designed to help the American people. President Trump put them into action, and he came in and overturned them. You know, our southern border is just overrun with hostile foreign migrants. You know, people can't afford to feed their families. Inflation is through the roof, but they lie to us. We're in a recession right now, but the media here and the Biden administration and the White House changed the definition of what recession is.
Now, many polls suggest that Democrats will be having a very close call in the midterms and may lose a majority in both chambers to give full congressional power to the GOP. That's the Republicans. Now, that would make the rest of Biden's tenure even harder, given the low job approval ratings that we're seeing now. Now, as Americans remain dissatisfied with the direction of the country, what role does the U.S. foreign policy play in President Biden's low job approval?
People who are really hurting, they see like a huge 9% increase to the military budget, where they see things like, you know, new military aid packages almost monthly to the Ukraine, what have you, being approved. And, you know, but they do not see any significant relief for those who, you know, people who are behind on rent, people who are behind on their mortgage, relief aid for basic things like food or gas, or the gig economy workers like Uber drivers. Then I think people begin to realize that it is all a matter of priority, that they can throw their hands up and blame Joe Manchin when they want, but they can come together on the military budget. So this is starting, people are starting to wake up again to this reality.
The ongoing pandemic and the disorganized economic recovery have already done damage, and inflation is only making things worse. Given that the government seems to have no idea about how to slow down the rate of U.S. consumer price growth, high prices are in fact one of the nation's major challenges. The public holds President Joe Biden accountable for the price increase, but he has not expressed much regret for his handling of the economy.
Sometimes this is definitely a factor. I think, you know, when war is costing people's lives, whether it's soldiers' lives or if it's a lack of focus on resources to people who are hurting here, including veterans, and costing people's lives and livelihoods, then it does become a factor.
The Biden administration's economic initiatives have stalled, despite the fact that the consumer price index is rising at an increasingly annual rate. Former President George W. Bush had the highest average in the sixth quarter at 75%, while the current president's ratings stand much lower. Do such ratings have something to do with how peaceful or warmongering the American commanders-in-chief are?
You know, I know my generation doesn't want war. And there are still older people in office that are obsessed with war. That warmongering spirit is dying out with the younger generation. And we are the next generation to carry on the future of America. And we do not approve. We are sick and tired of being fooled into going into foreign wars, being told lies, being propagandized into saying that, hey, we have to send American kids to die for this because this is the American way. You know, people are starting to wake up to propaganda too. You know, we have a lot of war propaganda that propagated the invasion of Afghanistan in the first place, you know, that kind of thing. And we're starting to wake up and see that we've been lied to, which is good, which is a good thing. There has been an awakening to a degree where we realized that we were being lied to.
Now, Joe Biden has faced some serious hurdles throughout his tenure so far. His administration had to face a global COVID-19 pandemic and its severe economic repercussions. Now, the administration's relief efforts were already expected to lead to a rise in inflation, and that situation became even more dire with the onset of the war in Ukraine, which affected the global supply chain, causing even more inflation.
He did extend unemployment protections for a few months, but, you know, and had Trump realized that messing with those protections was a mistake, he would have probably been reelected. But Biden then ended those protections, and he ended the moratorium on evictions to expire. He allowed that expiration and didn't really provide any relief for workers in the pandemic to get other protections. And most callously, I think the Democratic Party establishment and Biden are telling workers that we are doing great and we are in an almost unprecedented inflationary economy when there's just a matter of a month's time that the wages of people have plummeted and everything is great, they're saying, but the economy is on the mend, they're saying, and that's not the truth. So I think that this shows really the insidiousness of the Democrats and how when push comes to shove, they never really provide a challenge or an answer to the Republican Party.
It's not easy to keep the nation happy as they struggle with everyday challenges such as inflation and shrinkflation. Generally speaking, how can the Biden administration's performance be assessed, and how much of it is related to outside factors' influence on the economy, such as the war or the pandemic?
Biden was brought in to restore order and confidence, I think, in the system, which he has obviously failed at doing. But what he's also been tasked at doing is to be a respectable face for pulling, you know, COVID-19 economic protections and other protections from under the American population.
The presidency of the Democratic leader does not seem to be in a great position. That could be ascertained in the press conferences where unprecedented amounts of criticism are directed towards the White House and its performance. The United States is indeed walking a fine line in trying to keep the people happy while ensuring that Trump cannot win and taking on nemesis such as China and Russia.
You know, I've had a special name for Biden ever since he really, you know, was running and it became clear that he would win. And I would call him the Humpty Dumpty president. And by that, I mean that Wall Street or the Wall Street class, you know, they pulled out all the stops to get Biden elected and saw him as, I think, as the fifth figurehead who would better represent them and restore confidence in American empire and business as usual, politically, certainly at least. And they saw Trump as someone who's, I think, more volatile, someone who doesn't really necessarily represent the way that them the way they would like to.
Now, the president is also regularly criticized for his age. Critics believe that Biden is too old to take care of the country right now, let alone run again. Now, how could President Joe Biden's low job approval affect the 2022 midterm elections?
Well, it's going to be a red wave. However, with that being said, we're watching as they have declared monkeypox a health emergency, a national health emergency. There's going to be ballot drop boxes on every corner. It's going to be 2020 all over again. They're already planning it. They're already plotting and scheming it. And they're using the lying media, the propaganda, to take that away from us. Realistically speaking, it would be an overtaking of the Senate and the House. Easy. And then Biden's gone in 2024. But they have, like I said, we live in an occupied government, a hostile occupied government, and there's no limit to how far they will lie to you, how far they will gaslight us, and what they have planned for us. So I'm not really all that optimistic. I'm not optimistic about the midterms, but I'm really curious if America is going to let this happen to us again.
Now, however, the Biden administration has recently made some breakthroughs, which could partially shift the odds in Joe Biden's favor. Just recently, he announced that Ayman al-Zawahiri, al-Qaeda's chief and one of the masterminds behind the 9/11 terrorist attacks, had been assassinated in Afghanistan's Kabul. Now, the news could fix Biden's ratings to some extent, but analysts predict that it will not have a significant impact.
When President Trump was in the White House, America was respected. You wouldn't see them trying to pull the things that they're pulling now, all the way back from the botched Afghanistan withdrawal, where we left $90 billion worth of equipment overseas in Afghanistan, just millions and billions of dollars left overseas. And, you know, we also had allies. We had U.S. citizens that were abandoned over there. We've also seen Ukraine, where the Biden administration partnered with a man who had more, he enjoyed being on camera more than he did taking care of his country.
After all, Biden's withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan was viewed as chaotic and disgraceful and led to a swift takeover of the country by U.S. nemesis, the Taliban. Could Joe Biden make a two-term candidate? What are the chances for him to run again in the 2024 presidential election, and can he garner enough support?
He at least seems cognizant, but I that's a concern. And I also think the billionaire class is certainly shopping around for another option. I think we've seen Pete Buttigieg has been getting a lot of attention, kind of like boosting his profile lately. So that's sort of curious. And also Kamala Harris, she's actually on the flip side been sort of hidden. So perhaps in hopes that people will forget her general dislikability that has been witnessed in the 2020 election. So we have a very, in my opinion, very mediocre crop of potential candidates right now, and Democrats and everyone. So, and as we've seen, the pendulum of disgust seems to swing wildly between election, from election year to election year. So as I said, until we set to the task of building a truly independent mass party that can offer some of these really important systemic answers, then we're postponing some necessary growing pains that we're going to have to face.
The regular customer is the end game of the U.S. predicament today, yet lawmakers and other officials are only acting on party grounds. The U.S. economy may take years to recover, given all the variables. Conservatives are making every effort to defeat as many Democrats as they can with the 2022 midterm elections on the horizon.
Midterm elections, the 2022 midterm elections, I think not only Biden's job approval, but the abysmally low approval rating of Congress by most people of Capitol Hill. I mean, it's like less than 20% approval, right? So I think that will definitely affect the midterms. I think that will definitely affect incumbents, especially because just people are just dissatisfied and the pendulum keeps on swinging one way or another. So I think this is an absolutely unique moment that underscores the importance of organizing and building a truly independent left opposition party.
Inflation, along with other factors, may in fact serve as a springboard for Republicans to win over skeptics. Now, in the worst case scenario, President Joe Biden's impeachment might be attempted by a Republican-controlled House. Now, that might make it more difficult for him to win re-election and set the stage for Donald Trump, your former Republican president and a person facing possible criminal charges, to take over once again as U.S. president.
They could install him. If they really cared about Joe Biden running a competitive race in 2020, they would have never put up Kamala Harris as his vice president. They would have never chosen the most disliked woman in the country to run along Joe Biden as vice president from a deep blue state. Their whole electoral strategy, there's something very wrong with it. I don't think Joe Biden's going to make it for a second term. I think they're going to nominate somebody like Newsom. I think they're going to dispose of Biden. But even if they choose not to, they own the system. They run the system. So what we say and what we vote for probably doesn't matter.
If the economic situation gets worse in the U.S., the Democrats might have to confront prospects of absolute loss in the coming months and years. With the war in Ukraine, the disruption in global supply chain, and the rampant inflation, it would be very difficult for Democratic strategists to come up with a plan to convince average Americans to back them.
If those folks explicitly or implicitly support Biden and support lesser evilism, then the things that we're fighting for will be associated with those betrayals, the betrayals of the Democratic Party establishment. So we need to build a party, and we need to take on the Bidens and the Trumps and the Pelosis and the McConnells and even the squad types who are unfortunately providing a progressive cover for the serious crimes of the political establishment. So I think this is an interesting time, and we need to take advantage of it and certainly consider the Green Party as an option.
The Biden administration will have to work hard both at home and overseas to ensure that these challenges are met properly. Otherwise, they'll have to face the prospects of another Republican grip to power in the House, the Senate, and even the White House. And now let's see what Abbas Motarim has prepared for us for this week's program.
Oh, Joe Biden was seen as the better choice in comparison to Donald Trump. But the truth of the matter is that Biden, he is just like his predecessor. And many of the American people, they were so concerned with getting Donald Trump out of office that slogans like anyone but Trump developed. But as it turns out, Biden, he has arguably been worse than Trump. And even Biden's approval rating amongst the so-called American people has fallen to historic lows. On this episode of Power to the People, we're going to take a look at Joe Biden and some of his ways, because that's what he is. But first, let's define fascism. Fascism is the combination of capitalism, racism, and imperialism. It is a far-right, racist, ultra-nationalist, white supremacist ideology. In many ways, fascism, it can be described as the reform of oppressive systems to expand oppression and make it more scientific to the goals of white supremacist, capitalist imperialism. George Jackson, he defines fascism as, quote, "With every reform, revolution became more remote. But if one were forced for the sake of clarity to define fascism in a word simple enough for all to understand, that word would be reform." Examples of this would be how chattel slavery, it reformed itself into prison slavery. And it was merely a reform as a reform from the plantation into the prison plantation. And now we got more black men under correctional control than were enslaved. This shows us that the oppression had only got stronger, and it was all done so America can compete, so it can compete with other European capitalist countries that were industrializing. Joe Biden's policies can also be described as reformist. Those reformist policies are strengthening the corporate dictatorship's capitalist imperialist ways. While Joe Biden said he was ending the war in Afghanistan, he has continued airstrikes, which have killed children. He has also denied Afghan people their funds, and the country is on the brink of mass starvation. Not only that, but Biden, he has redeployed troops in Somalia, and he has continued the Western imperialist looting of Yemen and Syria. Biden is also responsible for continuing the NATO and American support of Ukraine. He authorized approximately $5.3 billion in military aid to Ukraine. And as the commander of chief of America and by default NATO, he is playing a dangerous game with Russia that could put the world in the face of a major nuclear crisis. Not only that, but Biden, he has given billions of dollars to Ukraine. Yet 500,000 people in America sleep on the street every single night. And there's over 38 million people in America who are food insecure. If that ain't fascism, I don't know what is. Biden has also led the American economy into a recession through his acts of declaring a proxy war on Russia. Since the start of the war, gas prices have gone up for Americans despite the price of crude oil going down. And this, it allows for the corporate dictators of America to take in huge profits while the masses of people suffer from these gas prices. It was literally created on purpose. This whole crisis was created on purpose as the U.S. uses racism, capitalism, and imperialism as a vehicle to do it. Another example is his response to the COVID-19 and Black Lives Matter movement. Biden signed a COVID-19 relief package that was supposed to go to the masses of people to support the economic burden that it had on people. However, what really happened is that much of the money went to police departments. In California, the state I live in, cities spent more COVID relief money on police than they did on housing, health, food, and other direct aid. There's even some cities that gave the majority of the money, or even close to 100%, straight to the police. And this didn't happen under Trump. It happened under Biden. And in order for the world to know peace, we must end fascism. We must end capitalist imperialism. This is Power to the People.
And thank you for tuning in, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Please make sure you join us next week again for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today, we complete our explanation of Surah Hadid, which is number 57 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, and mentions the heavy metallic element called Hadid or iron as being sent down by God to endow the earth itself with mighty force and provide humanity with the many benefits of its structural strength, as well as all the great tests of faith that arise from this. As we said in our previous episodes, Surah Hadid presents several divine attributes, then proceeds with the grandeur of the Noble Quran, the state of believers and hypocrites on the Day of Resurrection, accounts of the past nations, and spending in the way of Allah for establishment of social justice. It criticizes monasticism and social seclusion, and mentions the response received from the public by the previous prophets. We continue from where we left you a fortnight ago, and here is Ayah 25.
لقد أرسلنا رسلنا بالبينات وأنزلنا معهم الكتاب والميزان ليقوم الناس بالقسط وأنزلنا الحديد فيه بأس شديد وَأَنزَلْنَا الْحَدِيدَ فِيهِ بَأْسٌ شَدِيدٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ وَلِيَعْلَمَ اللَّهُ مَنْ يَنْصُرُهُ وَرُسُلَهُ بِالْغَيْبِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ قَوِيٌّ عَزِيزٌ.
Certainly we sent our prophets with manifest proofs, and we sent down with them the book and the balance, so that mankind may maintain justice. And we sent down iron, in which there is a great might and uses for mankind, and for so that Allah may know those who help him and his prophets in their absence. Indeed, Allah is all strong, almighty. If you remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, in our last episode, we said, if the life of the world is amusements and pleasures of the flesh for the sinners and disbelievers, it is an excellent opportunity for obeying God's commandments and abstaining from forbidden acts and things for the believers who strive for divine mercy and forgiveness. We also said that a faithless person is dejected when misfortune befalls and exults in wild joy when fortune favors him or her, while a true believer is patient in calamities and is thankful to God for whatever is gained. Allah, the All-Merciful, who tests the degrees of faith or the lack of it through both disasters and bounties, averts many a calamity, whether accidental or natural, such as storms, earthquakes, epidemics, and the like, because of earnest prayers and supplications to him. The ayah that we recited to you now means to say that striving toward divine mercy, forgiveness, and paradise requires the leadership of divinely designated leaders, that is, the prophets and imams. All prophets were granted clear evidences of their mission, and God raised prophets in every nation with a book that determines right from wrong in order to promote the concept of justice among mankind. Thus, the three aspects of divine sovereignty that could be drawn from this ayah are legislative, judicial, and executive. By means of the heavenly scripture, the scale or the balance to maintain justice, and the iron, which indicates power and progress. No revealed book is without a perfect balance. In other words, the relation of the balance to the book is that the scale to the map. The scriptures represent the map of divine knowledge in revealed form, and no map can be of any use without a precise scale or balance in society through the presence of an infallible person. Iron, for its part, stands for strength, power, discipline, and implementation of law and order. It is also one of the sources of industrial development, in addition to wielding political and economic power. Helping God, undoubtedly, reflects support for religion and the prophets through propagation of truth, equity, and justice in society, although the Almighty Creator is not in need of anyone, but all beings are in need of Him. This ayah teaches us that, number one, prophets do not force people to accept the truth and abstain from vices, but they explain to them in the most rational manner the depth of guidance towards paradise and the wicked ways that end up in the fires of hell. Number two, maintenance of justice in society is among the principal goals of the mission of the prophets. Number three, law and order at times require the use of power on the basis of the revealed book and the balance to discern right from wrong in order to discipline the wayward. And number four, iron is the symbol of power and progress of human societies with its many benefits. Now let us listen to ayahs 26 and 27 of the same surah.
وَلَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا نُوحًا وَإِبْرَاهِيمَ وَجَعَلْنَا فِي ذُرِّيَّتِهِمَا النُّبُوَّةَ وَالْكِتَابِ فَمِنْهُمْ مُهْتَدٍ وَكَثِيرٌ مِّنْهُمْ فَاسِقُونَ ثم قفينا على آثارهم برسلنا وقفينا بعيسى بن مريم وآتيناه الإنجيل وجعلنا في قلوب الذين اتبعوه رأفة ورحمة ورهبانية ابتدعوها ما كتبناها عليهم إلا ابتغاء رضوان الله فما رعوها حق رعايتها فآتينا الذين آمنوا منهم أجرهم وكثير منهم فاسقون.
And we certainly sent Noah and Abraham, and we ordained among their descendants prophethood and the book. Some of them, the people, are rightly guided, and many of them are transgressors. Then we followed them up with our other prophets, and we followed them with Jesus, son of Mary. And we gave him the evangel, and we put in the hearts of those who followed him kindness and mercy. As for monasticism, they innovated it themselves. We had not prescribed it for them, and commanded them to only seek Allah's pleasure, yet they did not observe it with due observance. So we gave to the faithful among them their due reward, while many of them are transgressors. These ayahs make it clear that prophets were designated by God Almighty and not elected or selected by mankind. Ayah 26 mentions two of the great prophets, that is Noah and Abraham, among whose descendants other prophets were raised and given the scriptures. But except for a few, many people fail to benefit from guidance and the divine bounties by falling to the temptations of the ever-deceiving Satan. Ayah 27 refers to the mission of Prophet Jesus, the miraculously born son of the Virgin Mary, who was given the evangel, and disciples whose hearts fulfilled by God with mercy and kindness. The next part of the ayah admonishes those who claim to follow Jesus but indulge in such unnatural practices like monasticism and celibacy, when God did not command such inhuman behavior, and in order to enable them to achieve His satisfaction, He only advised virtue and abstention from vices, which they failed to properly observe. Thus, God Almighty rewarded those who were the true followers of Jesus, while the rest were deprived of divine mercy for their sins and disobedience. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the mission of the prophets is to convey divine commandments for the guidance of mankind. Number two, an unbroken chain of prophets exists from the father of the human race, Adam, till the greatest of them, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, while after him are his 12 infallible heirs, the last of whom, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is in occultation and will rise in the end times to establish the global government of peace, prosperity and justice. Number three, Jesus was a human being and not God's son as alleged, which means those who deviate from divine commandments and do not follow the fundamentals of faith are transgressors. And number four, innovation, including celibacy in the name of religion, is against the letter and spirit of the revealed faith and a clear disobedience of God's instructions. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which also marks the end of Surah Hadid, here are ayahs 28 and 29.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu ittaqullaha wa aminu bi rasulihi. وآمنوا برسوله يؤتكم كفلين من رحمته ويجعل لكم نورا تمشون به ويغفر لكم والله غفور رحيم لئلا يعلم أهل الكتاب ألا يقدرون على شيء من فضل الله وأن الفضل بيد الله يؤتيه من يشاء والله ذو الفضل العظيم.
Oh, you who have faith, be wary of Allah and have faith in His Prophet. He will grant you a double share of His mercy and give you a light to walk by and forgive you. And Allah is all forgiving, all merciful. So that the people of the book may know that they have no power over anything.